and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. We're excited to be here again. And my name is Julie, and I have two guests here with me today. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Anita. Thanks for having me again, Julie. I'm a transitions facilitator.
And my name is Kirsty, and I am the Tay Rehab Manager.
Okay, well, welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining with me here. And Anita, can you give me a refresher about what you do? And then also, if you could create one holiday, what would you create?
Sure. So I work with 16 to 25 year olds with mental illnesses. My main goal is to make sure that their mental health is stable. So ensuring that they have a therapist or a psychiatrist, and even taking them to appointments, helping them schedule appointments. I also make sure that they maintain or obtain education and employment. Also, I assist them with accessing benefits such as Medicaid, food stamps, SSI, SSDI. I also help teach some independent living skills like cooking, cleaning, take them to the grocery store, budgeting, and even mobility skills. If I could create one holiday, it would be sleeping all day.
Okay, so Kirsty, can you tell us what you do? And then if you could only eat at one restaurant forever, what restaurant would it be?
I am the Tay Residential Rehab Manager. I do a lot of what Anita does, work with 18 to 25 year olds. We have four townhouses in the community with three clients in each house. We have counselors in the houses. I supervise those counselors in order to make sure that our clients are working on their daily living activities, doing things such as cooking, cleaning, getting out in the community and being integrated in the community. We also teach our clients, you know, what it takes to be ready to move out on their own after our program and what they need to be able to do on their own. Another thing I do is I attend a bunch of meetings that maybe I don't need, but we do a lot of meetings on different things for the company in general. If I had to eat at one restaurant for the rest of my life, it would probably be Sakura's. That's my favorite. Mm. Julie, if you could eliminate one food so that no one would eat it ever again, what would you destroy?
Onions.
That's rude.
Okay, so we've got to meet our guests today. So quick refresher on what I do. I'm the outreach and education specialist. And so to put it real simply, I am out in the community trying to find young adults that might need our help. I also lead our educational classes and our really fun events. Actually, our whole group is at King's Dominion today, but we're here recording a podcast with y'all. And so now that you know us and who we are and maybe some weird, quirky facts about us, we're going to introduce our episode, which is Emerging Adults and Who They Even Are.
Julie, who even are they?
Great question, Anita. Way back in 1995, Dr. Arnett did a pretty comprehensive study of several hundred young adults. He picked 18 to 29 as his group, and he asked them a whole lot of deep, dark questions about who they are, who they want to be, what's going on with them. And he found that they're unique, essentially, and that they're special and they deserve their own developmental group. And so what he found very dramatically is called the age of, and he found five ages, essentially, that he thought were critical for this age group. So the age of identity exploration, the age of instability, the age of self-focus, the age of feeling in between, and the age of possibilities. And so essentially, we found that this merits its own developmental group. And so we're going to talk a little bit more in depth because that's kind of vague, I don't know. And so we're going to talk more about emerging adults and then some warning signs that are going on with them.
Okay, so we know that emerging adults have a lot going on overall, especially with those life changes and even social changes. So first, we're going to start off by talking about what are social changes. A social change is an alteration in the social order of a society, and this may include change in nature, social institutions, social behaviors, and social relations. Julie and Anita, can you tell me what the hardest part of becoming an emerging adult was for you?
Sure. So I went big and did not go home. When I was 19, I packed my whole self up and moved to Canada, into Toronto, Canada. And so basically, I left behind literally everything I'd ever known, all the people I knew, my support network, schools, even though it's Canada, it's still a different country, different currency, etc. And I packed myself up and I moved to Canada. And so I really did not have like the phone a friend option or the ability to be like, grandma, please help. And so that was really independent of me. It was very difficult, but I really appreciated the experience.
Yeah, that's the individuation. This is basically when the child is becoming an adult and beginning to do things that their parents once did for them. So the cooking, the cleaning, the, you know, everything you did as a child when your parents would do it for you, you're beginning to do it as an adult. Also, this is where the child doing the adult roles, but at times you have your child who's 18 living at home who has to go out and get a job cooking and cleaning, but still living at home. So that's being an adult child. Basically, you know, you're doing everything that your parents were once doing for you, but still in the home. And that can be really confusing for anyone, even, you know, us.
So the hardest part for me when I was an emerging adult would have to be dating. I went to an all-girls high school, so there really wasn't any exposure to boys except next door at the Brother High School, where we went every now and then for events, mixers, but it was so awkward because the guys would be on one side of the room, the girls would be on the other side of the room. We were still at that stage where everybody still had cooties. So I really didn't, you know, experience dating until I got into college.
Yeah, that's actually one of the top things we hear from our clients that we work with as well. They want more friends, they want boyfriends or girlfriends. Many struggle with relationships, social skills in general. I'm sure you all know this, but when you're leaving high school, going into college, your friendships naturally come and go. When you're moving on, you're changing roles. We also see people trying new phases, cliques, squads, etc. You learn who is positive and helpful, but also who may be toxic or unhelpful in your life, because we all have those people.
Also, we all got those J-O-Bs. So that's a big social change for a lot of people. There's a whole lot going on with that.
Right. You have to be on time and listen to other people telling you what to do. And most of the jobs are customer service oriented. So you got to be prepared to have thousands of people telling you what to do, telling you what you're doing wrong. And this leads into our next topic, which is risk taking.
So risk taking, it's actually critical and a natural part of emerging adults' development. So they're going to use this to develop their prefrontal cortex. How many of you have heard that your brain doesn't stop growing until about 25 or so? So you're right. Research shows that front part of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, does not stop growing until around the age of 25.
And the prefrontal cortex is responsible for personality, judgment, following through, executive functioning, decision making, social boundaries, and just overall common sense.
So you can see with that front part of your brain growing until the age of 25 that, you know, combined with the social changes. So you just had to raise your hand to go to the bathroom. Now you got to pick your major. You got to figure out who you want to be when you grow up. That age of identity exploration is real critical here. But it must be really difficult. And in fact, like Anita and I shared our difficulties for emerging adults. It's just a difficult time to be alive and to function and, you know, determine your whole life. No pressure. And so if we're getting back into the risk taking, we see that the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for kind of judgment calls and, you know, good decision making, is not really done growing till 25. So, of course, risky behaviors happen. So, Kirstie, did we talk about friends with the social changes part?
We talked about it a little. But it's important to note that the brain is particularly influenced by the environment during the teenage years and might be particularly amenable to learning certain skills. It's a sensitive period for social information, meaning that the brain is set up during adolescence to understand other people and to find out about other people's minds and their emotions as well as our own. Brains at this time are good at understanding social hierarchies as well. I think particularly the fear of being excluded by peer and groups is a big driver of adolescent typical behaviors.
So, if we see that social behaviors are key in emerging adults, and we know that people in groups tend to do more risky things due to the fact that they think they're invisible, no one can see them, they're just blending in, or rather, they just have less accountability, and let's not forget, they have that not fully developed prefrontal cortex, which, as I said earlier, is responsible for their decision making, that sounds like a prime environment for risk taking.
Yes. And like I said earlier, this is important for the emerging adults to figure out what the natural consequences might be. So we go from a highly structured environment, from being in the home, from being in, you know, schools. You got all your teachers. You got a lot of people saying, OK, the bell rang, pick up your stuff. You got to go here, into figuring out college, which is pretty different. You've got to be able to pick your own classes. You need to figure out where the buildings are. Teachers hold you late. They send you early. You got to figure out where to go, how to get there, do your homework. You don't got your parents breathing down your neck. And so essentially, it's really difficult and it's really confusing. And so the prefrontal cortex helps guide those interactions. And so some people might be a little better at this. They may be able to intuitively figure out, I have homework. I should do that because I would like an A because I have this plan. I'd like to go to Harvard, Yale, HCC. I'd like to figure out what I need to be a marine biologist or a psychologist or a doctor or what have you. And so some people are naturally better at this, and that's essentially their prefrontal cortex has developed quickly. And so they might be wiser than their years.
Okay, so switching gears. me. Let's get physical, physical. I wanna get physical. All right, so I'm not the best singer, y'all. And you probably don't even know what that song is. But anyway, so, you know, we all went through puberty. We all know the drill here. I don't gotta go into details about that. But during this time, our emerging adults are seeing increased weight gain as well as increased height. Our girls are reaching their adult height around the age of 10 to 16, while our guys, they're reaching their adult height around 13 to 17. Also, we're seeing further development of the secondary sex characteristics. So just so we know, we're on the same page what that is. Those are the physical signs that one's body is maturing. So our men, they're having deeper voices, their shoulders are getting broader, their Adam's apples are developing. Our females, their breasts are developing, their hips are getting broader, and both males and females are starting to have some body hair appear in places we don't really need to discuss. Also, you know, there might be some skin changes. Skin's not as baby smooth as it used to be, getting a little rougher in some places. Sometimes, you know, we've all had some fights with acne. That happens around this time, too.
So that's a lot of body changes. So do we see body image issues?
Actually, body image issues are huge. And about 90% of women report feeling unsatisfied with their bodies. But clinically speaking, 95% of people with eating disorders are between the age of 12 and 25. And only 10% of people suffering from an eating disorder will seek professional help. One of the reasons for this could be the fact that young adults usually have someone that confronts them that is noticing the signs and symptoms that the individual may have an eating disorder. So if someone doesn't have, you know, that one trusted individual or a very good support group, then no one may be able to notify them of these signs and symptoms, and then they may be less likely to seek treatment.
Okay, so the last episode, we talked about some facts, and we're going to hop in that in a second. But really quick, I want to highlight a good resource for those that have questions about disordered eating or eating disorders. Disordered eating is kind of like the middle step between, you know, maybe being a picky eater and eating disorders. And essentially, a lot of people meet criteria for disordered eating. Actually, the staff were pretty surprised at a training we had just had. How many of the staff met criteria for disordered eating? Like those diet fads and all those things can really impact the way you think about yourself and your body. So a good resource is the Shepherd Pratt Center for Eating Disorders. They're located in Towson. They have a wonderful website and a good Facebook presence, and they share a lot of facts and resources. And if you have questions about, you know, yourself or a friend, or you're just curious, if you go on their website, they actually have a little screening quiz that you can take that would indicate if you are potentially experiencing disordered eating or eating disorders, and then gives you resources to reach out to somebody that might need some help. Okay. So switching gears away from kind of like typical emerging adult development and hopping into our field of expertise, the behavioral health side here. So last episode, we talked about the fact that 75% of those that are going to have a behavioral health disorder are going to start seeing the signs and symptoms by the age of 25. And so, again, that's our wheelhouse. That's you guys listening. And so we want to make sure that people are educated about some of these signs and symptoms. We also know, Anita shared with us last time, that there is a 10-year duration average of people seeing the signs of needing help and then actually going to get help. So this would be, for instance, like, you know, maybe you've got a lot of anxiety and it's starting to impact your ability to go to school or work or hang out with your friends or even maybe leave your room. And it takes you almost 10 years on average to find somebody to help you with this, like a psychiatrist or a therapist or a support group or even your primary care doctor. So what are these warning signs? We know that emerging adults have so much going on. We just covered all this stuff. And for a 50-year-old, if they were exhibiting these behaviors, we would say that's a warning sign. But for our emerging adults, it's a little trickier.
So as Julie said, it definitely can be trickier to note some of the signs and symptoms because our emerging adults are going through so many changes at this time in their life. So just some examples. Let's say we have a young man who was a basketball player. He was going to practice all the time, going to games. He was the MVP. Then all of a sudden, he stops going to practice. He stops playing. And he doesn't replace it with anything else. He's just home. Or not doing anything, and in bed all the time. This could be a warning sign. Then let's say you have a very extroverted individual who had a lot of friends. They were always on the phone, making phone calls, always going out. Then all of a sudden, you notice that they're losing contact with their friends. They're not going out as much. This could also be a sign.
Anita, you gave some really good examples. Risk-taking is really big at this time for, you know, these individuals. And there's also a sense of apathy. Some of the risk behaviors that come to mind when I think about risky behaviors is meeting strangers using substances, skipping school, or just anything where the person is not thinking of consequences of their actions. This is also a time where someone may talk about death more or even have passive ideation about different things. And then they have drastic changes from their previous behaviors. This could be when someone is just not doing things that they usually do. And some of the examples you gave fit great for that.
Yeah, so like Anita and Kirstie just covered, we're really looking for the holes, essentially. So, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but my mom made me play piano, and I certainly am no piano player now, and I dropped that as soon as I possibly could when I hit like 12 and was argumentative enough for that. But you know what I did do is I joined the drama club. And so, you know, there's different things that happen. Kirstie talked about trying out new phases, trying out new friends. So, you know, maybe, yeah, they stopped talking to their best friend of a couple years, but you don't really know what's going on in that story. And maybe they've made new friends and they're going to work on those friendships because they found that perhaps their best friend was maybe toxic or unhelpful or just, you know, not on the same life path, which happens a lot here too. And so we really want all of you out there to trust your gut. So if something feels off or something feels wrong, you should say something. I always give the example of I've got a little antenna popping up. If I feel like something's going on or a red flag or your stomach just kind of feels queasy about it or whatever example you want to give, essentially. But you need to assume that you're the only person, just because you're so darn smart, that is picking up all of these little breadcrumbs that somebody's leaving behind and really make a good effort to reach out. Because we've learned from sociology, a whole bunch of different studies have said that people are really quick to pass off responsibility if they're in like group settings. So for instance, if I've got Anita and Kirstie here and I'm worried about Kirstie or something, I can't assume that Anita's going to know or say something because she's probably thinking the same thing over there. And so what you can do if you're uncomfortable, maybe you don't know them very well, is you can go grab a friend and you guys can go have that conversation together with your person that you're worried about. And so these are your people, so take care of them.
You're right, Julie. Sometimes you just have to dig a little deeper. You know, if your friend is in the bed all the time, not answering your phone calls, you see they have bloodshot eyes, but they're saying, I'm fine, that's not really matching the picture. So don't be afraid to ask the questions. Don't be afraid to just be there for someone.
And you know what? Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain have helped to highlight this. They've shown that even people that are high-flying and extremely successful still need behavioral health check-ins.
Yeah, and I think that we often think of the really severe or negative side of behavioral health, but like we talked about last time, it's a whole spectrum. And so, one, I always say this because I've had a client tell me how much it impacted them. It's okay to not be okay. We really care about all you guys, and we want to make sure that you know that it's okay to not be okay, but you do need to take steps to take care of yourself and your people as best as you can. And I know that a lot of our young adults that are in our program, we give you some of our more severe examples, but we have tons that are like at UMBC full-time, or some of them make more money than we do because they're so gainfully employed. One of them moved to Hawaii. I was like, this is so rude. No, I'm kidding. We were really happy for them. But, you know, it's not just the really negative stuff that you can see. And so we want to make sure that you know that behavioral health can affect anyone, anywhere, anytime. And so we want you to make sure you're taking care of yourself and your people. So it's our resource dropping time. So pull out your phones. Yes, you. Or a piece of paper. Pull out a piece of paper or your phone. I'm going to give you some resources here. So one, seizetheawkward.org is an excellent website. They are going to help you start that really awkward conversation of like, Kirsty, I'm worried about you. What's going on? And they've got a lot of different resources there. Second is our National Suicide Hotline. Every single individual in the whole of the U.S. should have this in their phone. So rolling your eyes over there in the corner. Yes, you. Pull out your phone. Here we go. 1-800-273-8255. That is the National Suicide Hotline, 1-800-273-8255. They are 24/7. They are an excellent resource. You do not need to be suicidal to call them. It's okay to call if you're overwhelmed or you just need somebody to talk to. Another option is our crisis text line. That is 741-741. And you just send a text and it can say whatever you would like it to say. Hello. Hi, I need help. I can't deal with this anymore. It's really important to note that this is volunteer run, and so the response time is just definitely not as fast as calling somebody. If there is an emergency, you all should know this number, 911. Call it, okay? Somebody might be mad at you initially for calling for help, but in the long run, they're eventually hopefully going to appreciate it, and you'll feel better knowing that you helped keep somebody safe. So don't worry about making somebody mad because it's much better to have them mad and alive, to be quite honest. Okay, so a county resource for you guys. Grassroots, they are excellent. We're going to have them on for a show in a couple of months. They are a crisis center, so they actually have a homeless shelter there. And they have the mobile crisis team and the hotline. So if you call this hotline number, so again, pulling out your phones, here we go. 410-531-6677. That is 24/7. Okay, you can call anytime and talk to somebody. So again, 410-531-6677. That's the mobile crisis team is also activated through this. Okay, so if you call and say you need somebody to come to you, they can. This is looks like a team of two counselors and two police officers, and they come out, and the police honestly don't stay very long. Normally it's just like a protocol thing. They kind of bop out and make sure nothing else is going on because you never know when you go somewhere. And they'll talk with you and help you through your crisis. The other option you have with Grassroots is that you can actually go in person and have a drop-in crisis counseling center. And Grassroots is fabulous. I'm going to tell you one more thing about them. They also started a walk-in substance use center. And so this is fantastic. It's brand new. It's like a month or two old at this point. And if you are struggling with substance use, we know the opioid crisis is definitely impacting even Howard County, even though people want to maybe pretend that it's not, but we know that it is. So you can walk in anytime and talk to somebody about what resources are available to you. Okay, so we're switching gears to our send-off here a little bit. But before we do, I want to talk again about the purpose of this podcast. So we've given you two episodes of kind of introduction to who we are, what we do, why it's important. Hopefully you guys can fill in the gaps there about why this is so important that we're talking about behavioral health. And we want to be interactive, and we want to make sure that we're answering questions. So if anybody ever has a question, they are more than welcome to email me. My information is on the podcast description. And again, hello, my name's Julie. And our next episode, we're going to be talking about anxiety. So we're actually going to dig into what it means to have this diagnosis. We're going to dig into how to support this diagnosis, how to recognize it, and then also we're going to bring in a special guest with lived experience, and so they're going to come talk about what it feels like and what they wish people knew about having anxiety. So we're going to switch into our self-care send-off. I know that last time we challenged everybody to try a positive affirmation. I did not hear from anybody about how that went, but I will assume no news is good news. So for this time, we're going to challenge everyone to try scheduling an appointment with yourself. So I know that sounds super goofy. I'm right there with you. But as I sadly like to joke, because I'm now very old and make these kind of jokes, if it's not on my calendar, it's not happening. Very true. So I want everybody to pull out their phones one last time and schedule a 30-minute appointment with yourself. So what are you guys going to do?
I'm going to schedule an appointment with myself to take a 30-minute hot, warm bubble bath.
I am going to schedule myself to sit on my couch for 30 minutes and do nothing.
That both sounds very lovely. Perhaps I will be scheduling auxiliary appointments for myself. For myself, though, I am finally going to schedule a haircut because it has been way too long and it's just time. So thank you all for listening. It's been awesome. Stay tuned for our next episode, Anxiety.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.